Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me.
That's right. This week I am joined by Josh Davies, who is an ape researcher turned science journalist, and he spent 15 months studying gorillas and chimpanzees in a Central African rainforest. A particularly unique habitat because it is the last place in Africa where the rainforest actually meets the beach. So welcome, Josh. How are you this morning?
I'm very good, thanks.
Fantastic. Well, it's wonderful to have you here. Coming up, we've got a fantastic show. We've got a Brazil nut experiment. If you want to play along at home, all you're going to need is some rice, a large jar, like a good kind of large pasta sauce jar would be recommended, and a rubber ball. So very simple. Make sure you've got those and stay tuned for that. We also have producer Amna's going to be giving us a little game.
Yes, it's going to be very, very funny. Going to see how well you know your primate calls.
Okay. And we will also be hearing all about Josh's work studying gorillas and chimpanzees and some delightful fieldwork faux pas. So all that coming up. But before we begin the show properly, of course, we need our weekly brain teaser. So this week, sticking with our primate theme, why do monkeys like bananas? If you think you know, you should be tweeting us at Soho Radio with the answer, and we'll be revealing that at the end of the show. Why do you think monkeys like bananas, Josh?
I don't know. They fit well in the hand.
Okay, and wait, before we go any further, I need you to clarify something for me, please. What is the difference between a monkey and an ape?
Yeah, so basically, an ape doesn't have a tail.
That's it?
Pretty much it, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So all monkeys have a tail, but apes don't.
That's much simpler than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And you have chosen the songs for us today, so what are we kicking off with?
A corner shop brimful of Asher. Something cheery for a Saturday morning.
Love it.
There's dancing behind movie scenes, behind the movie scenes. Sagirani, she's the one that keeps the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life. Brim full of Asher on the 45. Well, it's a brim full of Asher on the 45. Brim full of Asher on the 45. Well, it's a brim full of Asher on the 45.
And bringing you this week's news, you've got your Saturday Science Club. And Josh, you have a particularly interesting one for us, and it's monkey related.
Yes, technically ape related.
Technically ape related, they have no tails.
So last week there was some news about bonobos and their vocalizations. And I talked to the researcher about a certain noise that bonobos make, which they call a peep. And the peep is apparently similar to... there's a vocalization which babies make, which they think is necessary for the development of language.
Oh, wow.
And they think that the bonobos also produce this noise, which sort of is independent. They produce it independently of the context, basically. So normally, an animal will make a noise. So, for example, screaming when it's scared. Or they'll, I don't know, like, make some sort of grunting when they're happy.
Mm.
But they discover that these bonobos make this particular noise, this peep, in completely independent of context. So it means that the other bonobo has to rely on other sort of cues and other stimuli to work out what the peeping bonobo is sort of saying, basically.
So it's like that sound can represent lots of different
things.
It's not like one alarm call, because some monkeys have like one alarm call which means snake and one which means eagle, which is amazing anyway. That's fascinating.
Yeah, precisely. And so it just means that so basically they think that they can put sounds together. So two separate sounds mean one thing and another one means another. And they can put them together to mean something, a third.
So it really is like the building blocks of language.
Basically, yeah. So they think that... and they think that because bonobos do it, and bonobos are quite closely related to chimpanzees, in fact, very closely related, they also think chimps probably do it. And there's also some evidence to suggest that orangutans do it as well. So they think it's much more sort of that those building blocks for language are probably much more basal and much more sort of ancient than was ever really previously considered.
We're not quite as special as we thought we were.
No, we never usually
are. When you were studying chimps, did you, or even the gorillas, did you find that there were certain noises they made that you kind of recognised and understood?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, especially with the gorillas and when you see them every day, they have like a certain warning noise, which I'm not going to do on the radio.
But oh, no. Yeah.
Where when you, even if you can't see them, they all normally know you're there way before you know they're there. And so you'll be walking through the forest and you'll suddenly hear this noise and you'll know that you're within 10 metres of them, even if you can't see them.
Oh, amazing. That's really cool.
And the chimps, definitely.
Yeah. Well, my news story this week is tenuously primate related and not nearly quite as scientifically sound. But so this is actually a bit of old news, but it's about the Ig Nobel Awards. The Ig Nobel Awards are kind of like, so we've got the Nobel Prizes, and the Ig Nobel Awards are more of a spoof award that are run by the magazine called Annals of Improbable Research. And it's kind of handed out to the sort of most fun, kind of wacky, pointless research. And last year, some Japanese researchers won a prize for studying what made banana skin so slippery. Which I just thought was fantastic. They measured the friction of the banana skin in a lab and showed that it was more slippery than either apple or orange peel, so those are not as hazardous. And there was actually some real reasons why they were doing this. They were interested in looking at kind of the friction and lubrication between the movement of our limbs. And apparently, this particular thing that makes the banana skin slippery is called a polysaccharide follicular gel, and it's similar, or it's also found in the membranes where our bones meet.
Weird.
So there you go. Banana skin peels have something in common with our joints and makes them nice and lubricated so we can move easily. Yeah. Top story, that one.
Answering the important questions.
All the important questions. Yeah, another great Ig Nobel Award was, I think it was a couple of years ago, was for the perfect angle to take the perfect selfie. Not as relevant to today's show, though. And producer Amina, what's your favourite story of the week?
Well, my favourite story was this research that decided that, you know, in England and Scotland's drinking guidelines are unrealistic and, you know, ridiculous, basically. They say that they're completely irrelevant to people who drink in the UK. You know, I was writing the story and I was kind of tempted to go with booze-loving Brits, but...
Yeah, I mean, that is what we're famous for.
But I think they make a really good point. So, do you know, for example, how many units there are in a pint or a glass of red wine?
It definitely is confusing. Like, and you buy a bottle of wine, it doesn't say, like, this has X number of units.
It's always percentage.
You have to, like, go away and work it out.
And so they just made the really decent point where people don't know how many units are in a glass, so they have no idea what their recommended guidelines are. Whereas in Australia and in Canada, they have standard drinks, so it's essentially, yeah, this is one pint, you should be drinking this amount in this week. And they also consider for when you're binge drinking and when you're casually drinking.
Wait, so they give recommendations for binge drinking?
Yes! Which the researchers say we should be doing as well, because there are people that are only drinking to get drunk. So, you know, you're going to go out on a Saturday night and you're not going to be drinking, you know, oh, this tastes really nice. You're just going to be doing it to get pretty hammered. And you should have some guidelines there. And I think a lot of them can include how much water you should be drinking just to stay as safe as possible. And they're much more realistic with people's drinking habits. And there's also guidelines for people who are much more casual drinkers who, you know, will have one or two glasses with their dinners every day. So I thought that was a very good point.
Definitely a good point.
Mm. So we're going to get new drinking guidelines sometime next year. And the ministers of health who are looking into it have kind of taken this research into consideration. So we'll see. Maybe the government will tell us how to binge drink.
Watch this space. There was... to bring it back to apes, there was a story a couple of months ago about chimpanzees actually drinking,
was.
Wasn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, did you ever see the chimpanzees drinking when you were studying them?
Unfortunately not, no. But it turned out there was some hilarious research in Guinea where chimps actually also binge drink on palm wine.
Do they actually binge drink as well?
They said that it was genuine, like, habitual drinking. So they'll come in and they use, like, leaves to make sponges and scoops.
Yeah, leaf sponges. I've heard.
And they
of
drank the wine, which they reckon was about maybe 7%.
And this was like a fermented tree sap, wasn't
yeah.
it? That was gathering
yeah.
somewhere
so
high.
In West Africa, they cut down the palm trees and they collect the sap and ferment the sap, and it's called palm wine. And it's quite delicious. It's quite a taste. But and the chimps learnt that the locals were doing this and decided to have a tipple.
Yeah, I remember when I read that article, they said that the chimps displayed drunk behaviour, like kind of making more noise and rolling around in the trees.
Yeah. And they said that there's this one chimp which was a particular drunkard. And at night it would take an extra hour to bed down because it was just so restless and didn't know what to do.
Oh, mental. That's kind of cute. Yeah. And you have one more story for us, don't you, Josh?
One more. Maybe not quite so fun, more serious. But there's the results of a 13-year study in Equatorial Guinea about looking at the bushmeat. So bushmeat is the sort of wild meat collected from the forest, basically. So deer and monkeys and rats and things like that. And they were studying a single market in Equatorial Guinea and over 13 years, and they basically found, quite interestingly, that bushmeat consumption, especially of primates, rose in tandem with economic growth.
Right, so they were eating the monkeys?
Yeah. They eat quite a lot of monkeys in Central Africa. And even in some places they eat the apes, which is...
And as they got more economic growth, they ate more monkeys?
Yeah, which is something which you wouldn't really expect, because you'd normally assume that sort of eating bushmeat and eating stuff from the wild, you would do it when you don't have the money, basically.
Mm.
And you can't afford to buy chicken or beef or things. But actually, that isn't the case, and they found that as people were earning more money, they were actually buying more bushmeat, and it then becomes a sort of status symbol that you can afford the bushmeat, basically.
Is it kind of like a kind of poacher's market, or is it
yeah,
totally
basically.
Fine for them to eat it?
Well, it's not illegal, but the point is, I mean, over the 13 years, they had 20,000, like, carcasses, basically, they found.
Whoa.
In this one market, in this one town. So it's quite a substantial impact.
Definitely.
It's not technically illegal. Well, eating the apes is illegal, but everything else isn't, which is quite unfortunate.
What are the health hazards to eating bushmeat?
Well, especially eating bats and apes, there is the health hazard. They think that's how the Ebola outbreak started, was from eating infected bats.
Do they also think that's how HIV might have started?
Yeah, so there's a similar virus called SIV, which is simian immunodeficiency virus. And that affects chimps and I think possibly gorillas. No, maybe just chimps. And they think that when people were butchering chimps, basically, they got infected and they caused HIV.
Oh, wow.
Not the greatest of status symbols anymore. what are we going to be listening to next?
Ooh. Saturday morning, let's go with a bit of David Bowie. Because every radio should be playing him. Why not?
This is Let's Dance by David Bowie. There may have been a little bit of dancing in the studio, but luckily not for your eyes to see. You are listening to the Saturday Science Club on Soho Radio. If you've just joined us, we're having a bit of a monkey-themed episode. And our brain teaser this week is, why do monkeys like bananas? So a clue, this is a bit of a joke riddle. So think outside the box, try and find the humour in that question. If you think you know the answer, you can tweet us at Soho Radio. And we are now ready to attempt our experiment. So this week we're doing something called the Brazil nut effect. And what you should have got is a large jam jar or pasta sauce jar, some rice, enough to fill it about 3/4 full, and something to be your Brazil nut. So I recommend kind of like a rubber ball. We actually have a clown's nose, but it's going to serve its purpose well. So Josh, I'm going to get you to do this for me. And the first thing you need to do is you need to put your Brazil nut or your rubber ball, whatever it's being, at the bottom of the jar. Then I want you to pour the rice into the jar until it's completely full. Beautifully done. So Josh is just pouring that in, and we can't even see can't even see our red clown's nose anymore. You're going to put the lid on, yep, nice and tight. Now, this is something that's going to demonstrate. The Brazil nut effect is a phenomenon whereby if you've ever bought kind of like a packet of muesli or a bag of mixed nuts and you open it for the first time, have you ever noticed that the Brazil nuts, the biggest ones, are always at the top? Which is kind of weird. Why are the biggest ones at the top? Surely they'd be at the bottom. Surely they're a bit heavier and they fall. But no, this bag has been moving around, being shaken, mm-hmm, and something has happened called fluid convection. So we're going to demonstrate it right now. Josh, I want you to shake that jar up and down, please. Yeah. And two hands is probably advisable. And so he's shaking it. And what is happening? Can we see anything yet? And keep going.
Oh, it's getting there.
Use two hands. You want to make it a nice vertical movement. Yeah. Bingo.
Voila. That's really impressive.
The Brazil nut, or in our case, our red clown's nose, has risen to the top of the jar and it's now sitting on top of the rice.
Excellent.
So this is fluid convection. And what's happening is, as you're moving the jar up and down, you are obviously, as the jar drops, there'll be like a fraction of a second before all of the rice and the Brazil nut drops. And in that time, because the rice is a bit smaller and has less kind of things moving against it, it moves slightly more quickly and fills in the gap underneath the Brazil nut ball.
I'm actually really impressed how well that worked.
Yeah, I know. I think there was a moment of skepticism. I was like, oh, it's still working around at the bottom. And then, boom, it appeared. You do have to get that technique right. You want to keep it going up and down nice and vertically. So to celebrate, let's have some more music.
Yes. Let's go with the Mystery Jets Young Love, because it reminds me of being a teenager.
Young love never seems too long. It's hard to young until they have a past. One night of love, nothing more, nothing less. One night of love that left my heart in a mess. If I only knew your name, I'd go from door to door. Searching all the crowded seats with the face that I once saw.
That was Young Love by the Mystery Jets. And now, it's time for our primate call game. Now, I haven't really been told very much about this. It's very much producer Amna's, because I'm going to be playing against Josh.
How excited are you guys?
I'm actually quite excited.
I know.
So this game is, what primate is this? I know, very, very original name.
Do you have a jingle?
No, I don't. I should have. Well, there'll be a lot of sounds coming up, so... Yeah. I'm going to play a quick call. It might be a mating call, might be, you know, screams of distress. There's a variety of calls here, and I want you guys to guess which primate it is.
Okay.
And you've got, you know, you can have up to six points. And we'll see who the winner is. And I will be given extra points for people who do decent impersonations.
Oh, fantastic. Right. That's probably the only way I'm going to win.
Let's start with the first. All right.
It's kind of like a kind of heavy, heavy panting.
Yeah, so
snuffling.
What do you guys think?
See, I would say gorilla.
Yeah. What would you say, Matilda?
Oh, I was going to go for something a bit smaller because it sounded really rustly, and I don't think gorillas breathe that fast. But I was going to maybe say a gibbon.
That was a trick round. That was an anteater. Just saying, this is not going to be an easy game. You need to listen very carefully. That was a curveball. That was not a primate. All right.
Okay. So mean. Okay, okay. We are on
you
edge
guys,
now.
Are you on edge?
I now know where you're coming from.
This is serious business, guys.
I'm glad I got the snuffling.
Okay, let's start with this one. I think this might be a lot easier.
Chimp.
Yes.
Definitely a chimp.
Okay, I'll give you both points for that, though. I should really just give Matilda a point for saying it first.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's about speed as well, Josh.
Okay.
I'm going to go with a baboon.
What are you going to go with, Matilda?
I'm going to say chimp again.
It's a gorilla.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It is a gorilla.
Oh, they sounded too aggressive.
I know, he sounded really angry.
I think they are quite angry. All right, this one's going to be might be difficult.
Oh. definitely a gibbon.
Yes.
Do you know what kind of gibbon, Josh?
A white-cheeked gibbon?
No.
White-handed gibbon.
White-handed.
My brother used to do an amazing gibbon impression when we went to London Zoo. It was like, whop, 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 whop.
Oh, that is quite good.
Okay, this one.
That just sounds like a bird.
I know, wasn't it?
So this is a group of monkeys.
Can you tell me anything else about them?
They're all calling for something. They're in a group calling for something.
Oh, okay. What are the ones... What are those monkeys that have the three, like, eagle and snake and stuff? Alarm
those
calls.
Those are vervet monkeys.
Okay, I'm going to go with those. I'm going to say it's a vervet monkey.
They are ring-tailed lemurs.
Oh.
I know. You forget that lemurs are primates.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. It's like a whole group of, like, yeah, and lorises. They're primates,
yeah,
lorises, too,
yeah.
And I always forget. And they're adorable.
They're so cute.
Okay, this is your last one, guys.
Okay.
It's all or nothing. Everything to play for. That's what I sound like when I make out.
That's gonna be my favorite.
Did you just record yourself, Amna?
What do you guys think that is?
Aside from like a baby bird screeching, which I mean, I don't think it is, but that is what it sounded like. I'm gonna go with orangutan.
Ooh. I'm gonna say a capuchin.
It is an orangutan.
Oh,
oh my god! I did not
well
expect
done,
that.
That was a good show.
I do think you won, Matilda.
Oh my god! You beat
Josh.
but
you both
Your
did
trick
very
questions.
Well.
Yeah. I think it was more that I was just running out of names of apes that I knew. Like, orangutan. That hasn't been said
yet. We haven't had yet.
And I don't know, they've got those big kind of mouths. I thought they could make that.
Yeah,
noise.
It's really funny. They look like they're kissing things
a lot. Brilliant. That was a lot of fun.
Well done, guys.
I will never forget the sound of an anteater now. Learn from your mistakes.
I know.
What are we listening to next, Josh?
Let's go for a bit of Johnny Flynn.
Johnny Flynn. Mm. So stay tuned, because afterwards we will be getting into the nitty gritty of Josh's time with the gorillas and the chimpanzees.
They lost eyes in old city streets where the funeral pyres burn the last of me. Dragging this nest through the den and I come out less besporting when I'm multi-fit and you be feeling now. She is well and he's always how.
Beautiful Johnny Flynn. So uplifting. I love him. He's great. Well, we are now going to find out a little bit more about Josh's time with his gorillas in the mm-hmm. mist. So, Josh, what originally got you interested in kind of primate research?
I suppose it all started. I mean, I did a degree in biology, and in my final year, I got to take a course in primate behaviour and ecology because it sounded really fun.
Cool.
And that's basically how it started. And then I just applied for a job out in Central Africa in a country called Gabon. I somehow managed to get it, despite not speaking any French at all.
Well, I guess the primates don't speak French either, so yeah. Maybe it was...
Maybe they have an accent.
And what exactly did this project involve? What were you doing day to day?
Yeah, so basically we were living in a tent in the middle of the rainforest next to a lagoon. And every day we would get up and we would walk out into the rainforest and we would go... Just basically trekking through the rainforest, trying to find the same group of gorillas every single day.
Wow.
So it was quite intense.
How many gorillas were in the group that you were following?
We reckon, I think it was about, no one really knew because no one had seen them all together at the same, but they think it was about maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the male called Kamaya, big silverback male. And then there was about, I think maybe 4 females. And then there was a couple of juveniles and an infant, I think.
Did you have any favourites?
He can't help but like the male Kamaya. He was so good. No, and you do. I mean, they all have their own personalities. It's like Kamaya was obviously the head of the group and really bloody massive. And then there was this really cute little juvenile called Moochie, and he was just so confident, and he would come running out of the bushes and do like tiny little chest beats.
Oh, that is adorable.
And then he'd just run back again. It's so funny.
And like, so were they kind of, they must have been aware that you were there. Were they happy with that? How?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. So, I mean, when I started, they were quite wary of us. Despite, I mean, the project had been running for about 4 years before the time I started. And they were quite wary of us. But then during the year I was out there, they slowly sort of, the male accepted us. And then you've got to sort of win over the females. So
oh, really?
He might like you, and he might let you sit there within sort of 10 metres of him. But the females will still be in the bushes behind.
A bit more cautious.
Yeah. And so you then have to start to sort of push it and just sort of break it down.
That's really interesting, because I would have thought that if the head of the pack had accepted you, they would all follow his lead, but no.
And there was this one female who was obviously sort of the matriarch almost in the group. And there were so many times when she, rather, because normally you'd expect the male to charge, but he would like accept us, and then she would come charging out of the bushes at us to try and scare
really?
Us off. Yeah. And she was like the sort of old mum of the group, basically.
Was that scary, having a gorilla charge at you?
First few times, yes, but then you learn that they all stop. So they stop within like a metre of you, basically.
So you just got to stand your ground.
Yeah, and not look them in the eyes. Worst thing to do.
Oh, really? Yes. So you have to like display loads of submissive behaviour.
Stare at the ground and just ignore them. And they come running up to about within a metre, and then they'll run away again.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
And so you were spending every day with the same group of gorillas, and what kind of things were you studying about them?
We were mainly looking at how they reacted towards us, but then also their diet and their behaviour to each other as well. So, I mean, I basically had to learn all the plants in the forest as well, so you know exactly what species of plants they're eating and what time, you know, when they're eating it, what season, and where and things.
Amazing. Did you like have any surprising discoveries?
It was interesting. So the where we were, the environment we were in, they had certain areas of forest, but then like in the middle of the forest, there's lots of swamps with a certain type of grass growing in them, and they found basically that during the dry season, the gorillas stopped eating in the forest, and they all moved down into the swamps, and they all start eating in the swamps, and then during the wet season they go out and they start eating all the fruit in the forest. So it's quite interesting that they had this
kind of seasonal variation in their diet.
Yeah.
And so was it just from watching them that you worked out what they ate?
No, so I mean, when you're walking through the forest, you'll often find like their tracks, feeding signs, and their track marks in the mud, and so you can tell that it was a gorilla eating there, basically, because they have very distinct, nearly very distinct signs and things.
And how did you find them every day? Because you
pretty much that you just go out into the forest, you start walking, and hope that you come across some gorilla songs. But I mean, there were loads of gorillas in the area. So I mean, there was the group we were following, but then there was at least another four other groups in the region, and so you just sort of had to find the tracks. You'd hope that it was the group you were looking for. And I mean, we had two teams out in the forest every day, so we could split ourselves quite well. And then you'd find the signs, and then you'd follow them and hope that you've got the right group, basically. And if you didn't, walk away and start again. And then once you found them, it's quite easy, because then you can follow them for as long as possible, and then the next day you go back to the last point and you start from that last point and you carry on.
Do they move a lot? Because in my head you always see kind of pictures of gorillas like sitting and eating, and they seem very chilled out and like they're just like having a great time, a bit like cows grazing on grass, but you know, apes grazing on their leaves.
I mean, so the ones you see normally are the mountain gorillas, whereas we were following western lowland gorillas. And they are They walk a lot, so especially during like the dry season and when there's not very much food around, they can walk 20k in a day.
Oh gosh, so you're getting quite a workout out there.
Yeah, definitely. I lost so much weight. It's eating rice and fish and walking every day.
And did you feel like you did kind of bond with them and make a connection?
Definitely. I mean, one day I sat with them for 8 hours.
Wow.
You know, and it's just, you can't not feel some sort of connection. Because they are basic. I mean, they're basically people. They have their own personalities and they do their own thing.
Yeah. And did you... So, were you just looking at gorillas or chimpanzees as well?
So, the project I was working at, they had two camps. There was one camp which was working with the chimps and one with the gorillas. So, I was mainly based at the gorilla one. But I did spend quite a lot of time at the chimp one as well. So, we'd go out and try and find the same community of chimps. Because chimps live in a slightly different way to gorillas. So they have a much more fluid social system. So they'll be one community at large, which is sort of made up of maybe 60 individuals, but then within that they'll form their own sort of small groups of like mothers and babies, and the males will often hang out together.
Oh, so cool. So kind of like almost like a little village community.
Yeah,
it's got, with family groups.
Yeah, it's called the fusion fission, because they all come together at certain points and then they all disperse again. And so it's a lot more difficult to find them for a start.
Really?
Yeah, because they don't leave lots of obvious signs and things. And they're
sneaky.
Yeah, they are really sneaky.
Which do you prefer, the gorillas or the chimps?
Definitely the gorillas.
Oh, really? Why?
Chimps really creep me out.
Why?
Because they're really horrible. They're really violent.
That, I guess that's true, actually. I've seen sort of documentaries where, was it a David Attenborough one, where they hunt another monkey, and they kind of do gang warfare.
They don't even just hunt other monkeys, they hunt each other.
They hunt each other?
Yeah, so if there's like two communities on the border of that community, they'll fight and they'll attack each other, for other chimps from other groups. And there is a report from the site where I was working where they found the body of another chimp, which had just basically been torn apart by other chimps.
No way.
Yeah, chimps are really horrible. They're I was writing that article, do you remember, where they're basically hunting like other local monkeys in that area that they live to extinction, or like local extinction as well, because they're pack hunters.
Yeah, you see the males kind of like strolling along their territory in like this gang, and it's kind of scary. I remember someone saying chimps basically exhibit all the kind of more horrible sides of human nature.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, probably. That whole thing about the hunting as well. I mean, like they split themselves into so one will sit in a tree and wait basically, and the other chimps will chase the monkeys to that one which is waiting.
And waits up the tree and they chase it. Oh gosh, so clever! They are so clever though. Yeah. I mean, when you were watching them, did you feel like you got a sense that they were more intelligent than the gorillas? I know intelligence is an arbitrary measure, but did you feel that it was kind of equal?
I think they probably, I suppose probably they are more intelligent. I don't know. I just think that the gorillas are a lot more sort of peaceful. I don't know. And whereas the chimps are just they are quite aggressive quite a lot of the time.
Were they more aggressive to you guys then? Was it harder for them to accept you?
I don't think they were necessarily more aggressive to us. I'm trying to think, actually. I had one time when I had a chimp throwing stuff from a tree down at me.
What was it throwing?
Just sticks and stuff.
Go away! Yeah. Stop following me!
But we didn't realise it was there, so we saw a chimp nest up in the tree, and we were just like, oh, there's a chimp nest, oh, let's go and have a look and see how old it is. And then when we walked under it, loads of stuff was like falling down. It's like, oh, the chimp hasn't left it yet.
Brilliant. Do you have any other kind of favourite stories from your time out there?
There was a really funny one of listening to it. So the way you find chimps, you'd walk in the forest for a couple of hours, and then every few hours you'd sit and you'd listen for half an hour, and you'd listen to see if you could hear them calling, basically.
Okay.
And during that time, you'd do it like maybe at 10 in the morning, and there's just loads of elephants in the forest. Just every day you would see elephants, basically.
Wow.
And this one time, me and my colleague, a guy called Yurik, were just lying there listening to the chimps, and it was about 10 in the morning, and we were both a bit sleepy, and we were just sort of lying on our backs with our eyes closed. And I was just lying there, and then I just suddenly hear this, Josh, Josh, Josh. I was like, yes, Yurik, what? And he's like, elephant. And I just, my eyes like sprung open, I just turned to my side, and there were these two elephants stood watching us, and he was like, uh-oh.
The studiers become the studied.
I know. And it's like, quickly put your stuff away and move away as quietly as possible.
Yeah, you don't want an elephant charging at you. I don't think that's going to stop 1 meter away.
We had loads of elephants charging as well, all the time.
And so one thing I want to ask you about next is whether there were any fieldwork faux pas. But I think we'll have a little song first. So... by a fieldwork faux pas, I mean, you know, you're working in the field, scientist in the field, and things that accidentally go wrong. We've been looking at a few of these. So someone accidentally glued themselves to a crocodile while attaching a radio transmitter. I'm going to leave you with that one, listeners. We're going to have another song, and then we'll come back and find out if Josh had any fieldwork faux pas as well. So Josh, what song do you want next?
I think we'll go with a bit of Elton.
Beautiful.
Again to find. I'm not the man that think I am at home. I'm not.
was Rocket Man by Elton John. If you've just joined us, we are chatting to the wonderful Josh Davies, ape researcher turned science journalist, and hearing all about his time studying gorillas and chimps out in the wild. And this has sparked an interesting idea about looking at fieldwork faux pas or fieldwork fails. So we already talked about the girl who accidentally glued herself to a rock crocodile. You've also got someone who accidentally caught a lion in a jackal trap and had to use three darts to tranquilize him because he was trying to escape. Another one of my favorites is someone who licked tiny object to discern if fossil or rock. Fossil. Sticks to tongue. Coughing fit from dust. Sharp inhale. Swallow fossil. that was a tweet, which is why it's so short, but yeah. And as someone who studies water voles had managed to switch frequencies of like the trackers with one of her colleagues who tracks bats. So she was tracking these frequencies and then she's like, why are my water voles flying? So some brilliant field work fails there. But Josh, I mean, what have been yours?
Probably one of the funniest was, so there's lots of mangroves where we were working. Obviously, under the mangroves, there's loads of water and just loads of mud. And I obviously fell in. it gets better. I'm crossing a bit, and I was like maybe waist deep in the mud. And you can't feel the bottom, and you just kind of, you're sort of wondering, is there a bottom to this? If I move, will I sink? I tried to walk, and my shoe came off.
Oh, no.
Under it. And so I was just like, oh crap, I'm going to have to
dig down.
And so I was bent double, like, up to my waist in mud and then up to my shoulder in mud. And like my chin was touching the water and I was just like scrabbling around. And it was, I was in hysterics. It was really funny. And then my colleague, who's a guy called Jaurice, came along with a stick and he was standing on one of the mangroves. And he was kind of like, let me just have a look. And he prodded around behind me. And I turned around and my shoe was sort of like floating just behind me after all of that. And I was like, oh, great.
Mud-tastic fieldwork fail right there. Brilliant. Another one of my favourites was that someone taking a picture of a cool spider and then just releasing it and realising he'd found an undescribed species and then
really
he'd just
sad.
Let it go before he could properly document it.
That's
kind of both amazing and tragic at the same time. But not all fieldwork is glamorous, is it? I mean, that sounds super cool and exciting, but and following gorillas and chimpanzees sounds just the most incredible experience, but tell us about some of the less glamorous. Sides.
Whenever we found it, we had to collect the chimp or gorilla poo.
Nice.
Yep.
What did you do with this?
We then had to take it back to camp and every evening wash it and use like a little sieve in order to get all the seeds and then count the seeds and what species and make a note so you know what they're eating.
So it's kind of like sieving for gold.
Pretty much, yeah.
Instead of sieving for mud, you're sieving through poo for seeds.
Yep, that was always a fun one. Even worse was, and we were also meant to be collecting the leopard poo as well.
Oh.
There's quite a lot of leopards. But that is just the nastiest thing.
Really?
You can imagine. Smells so bad.
God, that, I guess that's the difference between carnivores and herbivores.
Yeah, it's horrible. Like the gorilla stuff's not too bad. It's like horse poo, basically. It's just loads of grass. Well, not grass, but loads of vegetation.
Was there ever like a competition who could find like the rarest seeds or whatever?
Well,
not a competition, but you know, like bingo, I got
this species. It was quite interesting, like you could see what was coming into fruit. So like you might get one day and it might have like maybe only a few of one type of seed, and then next week it might be full of that type of seed. So you know that those trees are coming into fruit, which is quite interesting. But
wow, gosh, you really did know so much about them. That's amazing. I'm afraid that we're going to the end of the show and that's all we've got time for, but it's been absolutely fascinating having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Really, really enjoyed it and kind of enjoyed winning at the climate calls. Yes.
Never going to live that down.
Well, you've got one final chance. So at the start of the show, we asked our weekly brain teaser, why do monkeys like bananas? Josh, do you think you know?
I have no idea.
Okay. And, well, I can finally reveal it's because they have a peel.
Oh.
Terrible and brilliant at the same time. So well done to everyone who tweeted that in, which actually I think was no one. But thank you for all your other suggestions and better luck next week. What are we going to have as our final song, Josh?
Well, I think nothing's, it's never complete without a bit of Fleetwood Mac, is it?
No, never. Absolutely. This is Go Your Own Way, and we bid you all goodbye as we go our own way for the rest of today.